Welcome to the Voice of Family Business on Capitol Hill. It's great to have you with us. With each podcast from Family Enterprise USA, we bring you the latest news, expert opinions, and insights affecting the country's largest employer, the American family business. If you like this series, please remember to subscribe and sign up for the alerts as future shows are posted wherever you download your podcasts. In this episode of the Voice of Family Business on Capitol Hill, host Pat Saldano of Family Enterprise USA talks with two prominent women who run generationally owned family businesses. The two guests are Paula Lafferty, CEO, Snowtemp, a family-owned and operated temperature-controlled public warehousing company with two facilities located in Oregon, and Lauren Dahl-Sheeter, managing partner, Dahl Distributing, a third-generation beverage distribution company.
So welcome to today's podcast. I'm Pat Saldano, president of Family Enterprise USA and Policy and Taxation Group. If you don't know who we are, we advocate for generationally owned family businesses and their lifetime of savings in Washington, D.C. at a national level. We represent all sizes of business and all industries. So today, we're here with Paula Lafferty, who is Chief CEO of Snowtemp, a family-owned and operated temperature-controlled public warehousing company with two facilities located in Oregon and a critical link between local food processors and consumers. They've been in business since 1957, and I know Paula's going to talk to us a little bit more about the company in just a second. Lauren Dahl-Sheeter, managing partner, Dahl Distributing, is a third-generation Council Bluffs, Iowa beverage distributing company with an extensive beverage portfolio. Last year, Dahl expanded into eastern Iowa, now offering distribution services in 44 counties in Iowa and 8 counties in Minnesota. So today we're going to speak about the challenges and opportunities women face in family businesses in the past, the present, and of course in the future. So it's great to have both of you with me today. Thank you so much for joining.
Thanks for having us.
So let's just get right into it and start about the history of both businesses. Give us more details. Tell us the size, the number of employees. I talked a little bit about where you're located, but please expand on that so you can, the audience can have a sense of your business and what's involved in that. And so, Paula, why don't we go ahead and start with you?
Sure. Yeah, so my family business, Snowtemp Cold Storage, was started, like you mentioned, nearly 70 years ago in Eugene, Oregon. And we have expanded over those 70 years every 3 to 4 years on average at our two existing locations. So our mission has always been to be an integral part of the food supply chain. And today we have around 100 employees, and our focus has always been on providing reliable and safe cold storage solutions and building lasting partnerships with our customers.
Excellent. And so you're second gen, correct?
No, I'm actually third generation. My
third gen. Okay, you said that.
My grandmother started the company, and then we have transitioned from my dad and my uncle who ran the business prior.
And are there other family members that work in the business, like your dad and your uncle? Do they still work in the business? And you have siblings?
No, and my uncle have retired from the business, and but now we do have 4 third generation family members that are working day to day in the operations.
Okay, and are those siblings of yours?
Siblings and cousins.
Okay, so Lauren, let's hear about your business.
Awesome. So Dahl Distributing was founded in 1965 by my grandparents Merlin and Edith Dahl, but Merlin's love for the beer industry did not begin in the distribution industry. He actually worked for Storrs Brewing in Omaha, Nebraska, where he was a territorial sales manager. And unfortunately, one day the brewery sold, and the owner called him into the office and said, "Listen, brewery sold, you're out of a job, and so is the rest of your team." So luckily, Merlin had met many different people throughout the country through his territorial sales manager position, one being Mike Rorty from Anheuser-Busch. That relationship led him to a small distributorship in Hastings, Nebraska, which my grandfather and grandmother decided, yes, we're all in. We want to be in the beer distribution industry. They worked that small operation for about a year before the operation in Council Bluffs, Iowa opened up. They sold the Hastings operation and began our history in Council Bluffs. The second generation of my father, Mark, and then my uncles, Jeff, Scott, Jay, and my aunt, Tammy, purchased the company from my grandparents in 1987, and their main focus was just growth. They purchased six additional wholesalers in their time of leading the company and expanded us from our 11 counties that we started in to growing across basically Iowa and then into our territory in Minnesota. And not only through territorial acquisition, but they also grew through brand acquisition. And now the third generation of my brother, Andrew, myself, and then my three cousins, George, Charlie, and Gus, are all in the business. And our growth is also to continue focusing on growing the business. Today, we represent over 120 different beverage suppliers from the U.S. and outside of the U.S., including Anheuser-Busch, Constellation, Boston Beer, some local brands as well, and some non-alcoholic brands. And we have about 325 employees, depending upon seasonality.
Well, so both of you are in very, very important roles with both your companies. Maybe you could speak to us a little bit about the challenges that face women business owners in running these family-owned businesses. So I'll go back to you, Paula, and see if you have some input on that.
It's interesting. Starting in the business, the roles that I was directed towards were definitely more like office type work. And I don't think that it was anything intentional by my dad or uncle to not have me work in the warehouse like my brothers and my cousins, you know, the male members of the generation that would go and work in the warehouse. And so, but I realized that it actually put me at quite a disadvantage, not really having worked in our operations. I had a good understanding of the business side of it and having worked in HR and IT and accounting and customer service, but really felt a gap in the operational side of the business. So it was actually a time during COVID where, you know, things had just changed drastically. And I used that opportunity to take time to work in the warehouse. And that was, it was actually really instrumental in my transition into CEO and being able to have connected with all of our employees, have really having driven forklift, worked in the freezers, firsthand been able to see their challenges. I think that that really gave me a lot of credibility in their eyes in terms of being a woman business leader in a company that is mainly, that is very male dominated.
Yeah, I think that's fascinating. I wouldn't have thought of that, but kudos to you. Well, that just makes so much sense because you really want to have that operations experience. And it's good that you kind of pushed yourself toward that. So Lauren, how about you? What are the challenges that you see?
Very similar, I believe. In the beer industry, there's only about 12% of the population is female. So there's some work to be done in that side of the business. But Anheuser-Busch, who is our largest supplier, they kind of have a program where we go through and you have to learn each aspect of the business. And again, unique that they approve the next successor of the business, the distributorship. So through that process, I was able to learn the transportation side, the warehouse side, the IT and the regular office positions as well, but get an all-encompassing piece of the business. But I think with their support and my family's support, I've had a great experience.
Well, that's excellent. Well, so let's talk about you. You both mentioned that you have different generations working in the business and you guys are third generation. What has been some of the challenges that you faced in this transition from generation to generation? And I know, Lauren, we met in person in Des Moines. We were sitting with your dad, and he was quite comical about the how you transitioned him out of his role and you transitioned into it. So maybe you could share that with everyone.
Well, he might have fabricated that one just a little bit, but he'll tell you that he showed up one day and there was just a box sitting out of the side of his office and I was sitting at his desk. I would joke that somebody's got to do it. But I think one of them would definitely be your team that you work with every day. You come in, you're a little bit younger than some of them might be. And being a female, I was one of the few females within the company. And just proving to them that you deserve to be where you are and that you didn't just have it handed to you, right? You've worked your way through the top to the top, and you deserve to be there just as much as they do.
I think that's a really important point, because as a family member, no matter how proficient you are, they're always going to see you differently, right? So in some ways, you almost have to overperform to get the kind of credibility that someone that maybe isn't a family member would get. And then there's the other side of that, too, as well as sometimes family members don't perform. And then you have to deal with that as a family. So, Paulo, how about the challenges you faced?
Yeah, when I think of like our generational business transition, I always think of two parts. There's the leadership transition and then there's the ownership transition. And so lucky for us, my dad and uncle actually started, they had already navigated this process once, and they started the transition ownership to us early, which included things like plans on how things would be handled in the event of an untimely death. And luckily we never experienced that, but it did make the early planning make things very smooth for us on the ownership side. And then the leadership transition is much more nuanced and it takes ongoing work. I'd say that our third generation leadership transition started over 20 years ago. And kind of like I mentioned earlier, we worked in a lot of different areas in the business in order to learn the business. And like Lauren said, make sure that people understand we're hardworking, we understand what we're doing, and they have the confidence that we like should be here working in our roles that and running the business, and that they should have like confidence in who is running the company, and that it's not just because, you know, we're a family member. But I also think that like the leadership transition, it's not like a set it and forget it process. We're constantly assessing whether we have the right people on the team, and that's both family and non-family members, and how we can continue to make sure we're evolving to meet the challenges that we see ahead.
I think you brought up a really good point, is the leadership transition versus the ownership transition. In some ways, the leadership transition can be easier, because what we found with the survey that we've done at Family Enterprise USA is all family businesses say, oh yeah, I want to transfer ownership, but they struggle, especially the founding generation. They struggle with that. They'll pass on the management, but then they're, well, I'm just not sure if they're ready for the ownership portion. And some of that is because the founding generation just says, I don't know if I have enough, and I don't know what, if I let this go, what's going to happen. And eventually we have found in our survey that the vast majority of them want to transfer ownership, but unfortunately a very small percent do. So kudos to you for doing that. How about Lauren, in your case, have you been able to transfer ownership from generation to generation?
We are in the process right now from transferring second generation to third generation. We are in the past year have bought out two of our second generation family members, with two more of the second generation still active in the business. And probably down the next few years or so, we'll be transitioning those two out as well. But it is an interesting point too, just as the companies grow and you grow through acquisition or brand growth for us, our valuation increases of our company, which does make it harder for the third generation to come up with the funds to buy out the second generation. So luckily, I mean, we have a great tax firm and great people and teams around us that have helped us navigate this, but there are challenges to face.
Well, yeah, and you brought up the tax policy, which of course Family Enterprise USA works on tax and economic issues for family businesses. And the estate tax is exactly what you're talking about, is you have to pay the gift tax or estate tax, so makes it harder to plan. So have both of you found that the tax policy, estate tax being one of them, but maybe other tax policy you could speak to have hurt you in the planning and the operations of your business? And maybe there's some policy that's actually helped you.
You know, I mentioned earlier the fact that we had contingency plans for an untimely death. And I think that that's when you talk about how tax policy would help or hurt us, but like an untimely death in a family business can really be catastrophic, because if you haven't been planning and preparing for this for years or even decades, and someone passes away before you've been able to do the planning, the next generation most likely won't be ready or have the funds to buy that and pay that estate tax as well. So I think that like planning is just so important, and making sure you're prepared for events like that.
I completely agree. For me, I'd say there's probably three things. One, obviously, we know there's a lot of regulations and new tax laws that get passed each year, which does make it difficult for planning and succession purposes. Maintaining the current tax rates or tax brackets is crucial. We think that family businesses need consistency of tax rates, obviously due to the complexity of the budgeting and succession planning. We also need to know the rules of the game so that we can make our best decisions possible for our businesses. Next, I would say that to reduce the estate and gift taxes, like we kind of talked about, and make the exemption amounts permanent. It obviously, the state and tax, the gift taxes hamper our ability for family businesses to pass on the business to the next generation, as the beneficiary is taxed on the value of the business, which is not liquid, making it difficult for the next gen to afford the taxes to keep the business in the family. And then third, I would say, would be to make the Section 199A deduction for pastor entities permanent. Obviously, this deduction helps families ensure that the family business owners pay tax rates comparable to big corporations. And without these deductions, we don't believe that family businesses like ourselves would be able to compete.
Well, those are all really good points and all really things that we're working on. So both of you, I think I've probably asked this already, but are both of you a pass-through entity? So you're an S-Corp or an LLC or an LP?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. So as you just said, Lauren, the 199A is critical. The income tax rate is critical. And Paul, I'm glad you brought up the point about, you know, an untimely death, because we actually have, it's a friend of mine who's a woman-owned business, and she ran the business with her brother. And that's exactly what happened is he had a massive heart attack at 65 and they owed $60 million in estate tax. And they didn't plan. He was only 65, so they didn't do their planning yet. And so it was a challenge, and they had to borrow, sell stock, negotiate with the IRS. They got through it without laying off any employees, but those things happen. And the estate tax, unfortunately, people don't understand that that's the people that it hurts the most. The people that pay the tax is the people that it hurts the most, not the people, the kind of the billionaires that ultimately don't pay a significant amount of that tax revenue. So I appreciate both of your inputs on that. Obviously very, very important. And so, you know, Lauren, you've talked about some of the things that could really help family businesses. And you talked about certainty and permanency, which is, I totally agree. It's so difficult to try and change your operations every single year. Paula, are there other maybe specific regulations or legislation that you think might be helpful?
You know, I don't have anything specific. You know, locally in Oregon, we've had some taxes on gross sales that have, one has passed and one did not. But it creates a challenging environment, I think, for all businesses in our state. And for a smaller family business, it creates difficulty to be competitive nationally and to navigate those different state tax regulations. Because we are involved in a lot of construction and building, and so around a lot of the deductions for that infrastructure, year to year, we're always figuring out like, okay, what does expanding look like this year? And not really having the certainty of what we have available to put towards our growth.
I know when Trump was in office the last time, they had the 100% bonus depreciation, which was really beneficial for us. I mean, able to purchase new trailers, new equipment for our, not only for our delivery team, but for our warehouse, and being able to deduct that year one was huge and opened up some great capital for us.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you mentioned bonus depreciation, because we're hoping it's going to be back on the table as R&D expensing, which I'm sure also affects both of you. Unfortunately, that's already expired. So people are already wrestling with capitalizing over 5 years versus expensing. We're hoping that, you know, when all the provisions in TCJA get revisited next year, that those things will absolutely be back on the table. Because quite frankly, both of those have bipartisan support. And we're in the Senate bill that's still sitting in the Senate tax bill. So what we encourage you to reach out to your legislators, as you well know, and tell them what's important to you, because they do listen. That's what they're there for. So let's talk about the communities, because people forget that tax and economic policy and your businesses affect communities as well. How do both of you help your communities, either, you know, volunteer, donate? What is your community programs that you have? And Paula, we'll start with you.
Okay. One of the unique ways that we're able to contribute to the community is by helping local food banks. So we will donate our storage and our services so that they're able to accept donations of frozen or refrigerated goods. It's been a really great collaboration with the different food banks across the state. We've also worked with different organizations that address food insecurity. And then, on a more personal level, like our management team, we will volunteer together. We encourage our employees to get involved in the community. And then we actively like to support charities that our teams care about or that our teams are supporting. And then as a family, you know, we live here. This is the community that we're in. Our investment in the company stays here with local families. And we are able to support local economic initiatives that will continue to make this a great place to live.
Excellent. And how about you, Lauren?
That's great. We also do food banks. Our team is volunteering at the Iowa Food Bank tomorrow. So we not only volunteer our time, but we do donate product to help support their events that they put on and different things like that. Here in Des Moines, I'm also on the board of directors for our local zoo, the Blank Park Zoo, which we believe helps attract people to the community from not just Des Moines, but from outside of Des Moines and potentially other states, as it's a family-friendly activity. We support a lot through conservation efforts through our local Ducks Unlimited and Delta Waterfowl chapters, and also support local arts. And I think our biggest two probably this year have been, one, supporting our Secretary of State's efforts to end human trafficking in Iowa. Mm-hmm. Didn't know that was such a big issue until I dove into it, and we are very proud to be supporting that effort, as well as our efforts to stop drunk driving. Obviously, being a beverage distributor, that is a big priority for us. We want to make sure that our communities are safe and that people are being responsible when they do partake in the products that we sell. I would say between that and then also supporting what our employees are interested in, if they come to us with a request, we most likely are going to say yes to it because we want to be a part of bettering the communities that we live and work in.
Well, you both do amazing work with your communities, and I was surprised to hear about you're storing the frozen food for food banks. I didn't even think about that, but that makes sense if you have frozen food. So very interesting. And we've learned how important family businesses are to their communities because we've learned that 70% of family businesses give locally. And so our legislators really don't understand that if for some reason your business can't stay in existence, whether it's estate tax or income tax rates or any of the things we've talked about, the family will lose their livelihood, the employees lose their livelihood in all possibility, and then the community loses all of that charitable giving and volunteering and all the great things that you do for your community. So we're here to help you stay in business, continue to thrive, continue to pass it on from generation to generation. So with that, I would just ask if either of you have any final thoughts that you'd like to share with me or the audience.
No, I'd just like to say thank you. We really appreciate all the work that you guys are doing to support family business.
I would second that. We appreciate the opportunity to talk with you today.
Well, absolutely. We really appreciate you being on this podcast with us today. So to the audience, we hoped you liked today's show. And if you did, please subscribe to our podcast wherever each episode discusses the critical issues affecting generationally owned family businesses and their lifetime savings, as well as successful individuals around the country. You can find this podcast wherever you download your podcast. Until next time, thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening to this week's Family Enterprise USA podcast. This is the only series devoted exclusively to the critical issues facing America's family businesses, the families that own them, and the clients of family offices. We hope you liked this episode. Please make sure to subscribe and tell others about our podcast. Having your voice heard in Washington, D.C. and throughout the country can make a difference. We look forward to having you listen in next time.